Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 23 with Ozzy, as my friend Brian Posehn would say it. So before we get to that, I just want to tell you up top, the next Nerdist Podcast live at Largo in Los Angeles will be July 28th, right after Comic-Con. My special guest will be Fred Willard. That is going to be amazing, which apparently is a word I'm told I use a lot. But it really will be. So go to Nerdist.com. There'll be a banner there. You can click on it, buy your Fred Willard tickets, and come out to see that because the live shows have been amazing. And I use the word again. I'm not afraid. So here's a little background on the Ozzy interview. A couple weeks ago, my buddy Ryan Vance, who works for a company called Revision 3, said, "Hey, how would you like to interview Ozzy for Dig Dialogue?" And I said, "Osborne?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Fuck yes!" And there was kind of a weird pause while we both kind of soaked in my aggressive response. And I said, "Look, I would love to do this." Dig Dialogue, by the way, is an amazing video interview series that is co-produced by Revision 3 and Dig. So you should go there, by the way, and check out all the interviews they have because they're fantastic. And I said, "Look, I know the Dig Dialogues are about 25 minutes, 30 minutes. Do you mind if I record the entire piece and put it up as a Nerdist podcast for my listeners?" And he said, "No, of course not." So this is what you're getting. This is the unedited interview. There's a lot of us like coming in and sitting down and talking before the cameras start rolling. And it's very fun and conversational. And I have to say, Ozzy was incredible. Like one of the most gracious people I've ever interviewed, and super intelligent and thoroughly contemplative. And he actually played me after the interview. This is what a nice guy is. Played me large chunks of his new album, which is called Scream, and it's out now, and you should buy it because it was amazing. I have to say, it's probably even more amazing to listen to it with Ozzy. I don't know if you're going to get the chance to do that, so you should just buy it and pretend that he's standing next to you. But he was just like 50 kinds of wonderful, and I really enjoyed the time that I could sit down and spend with him. It was about an hour, and I hope you enjoy it too. So here it is, the Nerdist Podcast number 23 with Ozzy, like Brian Posehn would say it.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Thanks for inviting us.
That's Chris Ozzy.
Hey, man. Chris. Nice to meet you. Chris.
Oh, Chris.
Where do I sit here?
I think we're going to put you in this chair.
Cool. Can I get you mic'd up?
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. I'll run it right up under your shirt.
Do you want these taken off because someone's going to rustle?
No, you know, I'll put it up here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Can you run this up under your shirt?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, have a seat.
How are you getting on with this? I got one. I can't even turn the fucking thing on.
The iPad? All right, we can talk about it. We can talk about it a bit. I think it's the greatest thing I've ever owned.
Well, my son said it's like unbelievable. I don't own a computer, a fucking cell phone. I got one of them for free, and I go, what the fuck is this all about? It's like a giant cell phone to me.
See, this is why I know that you are entertainment royalty, because Apple doesn't give anything to anyone, so if they sent you one, that is a huge deal.
They didn't say. I got one from an award show for a gift that he did last weekend. It was in like a package, and I was like, whoa.
That's pretty sweet. I stood in line for this guy. That's dedicated nerddom right there, when you'll stand in
but
line
for
a device.
But you have to download it from your computer to whatever you want on it, yeah?
Well, some of the stuff, yeah, but a lot of it you can just buy, over the air.
Okay.
So it's pretty great. But if you don't even own a computer, it doesn't make sense. Like, it's not...
I mean, I've tried to fight it for all these years, but I mean, this is all computerized now.
Yeah. My father, I'm still trying to get my dad on email, and he won't do it. He's just decided, like, you know, the time for me is...
I don't know what buttons to press. Mm-hmm. I don't get freaked out. I'm going to press the wrong button, like, get arrested for pedophilia or fucking start World War III.
Well, see, if they take the pedophilia button off the computer, then you can't
I know it's just stupid, but I come from the old team, you know. I mean, when we used to buy vinyl and things. When you don't get fucking discs anymore, I don't know what they're going to get now. It's all down on a wire in a frame.
They'll just beam it right into your head.
Yeah.
You're going to have to... This is going to be antiquated in like five or ten years.
I mean, so many long time ago, said to me, what science fiction today is science fact tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got cassettes, VHS cassettes.
Yeah.
I got DVD. I don't play them anymore. It's like just junk. I remember when somebody gave me a Walkman years ago. I thought iPod. I thought, what the fuck's this thing? You know? Now I can't live without my. That's one thing I do use my iPod.
We have a mutual friend of Rob Zombie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And Rob has like the most extensive collection of horror DVDs I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, I think he's got everyone that's ever been
out. Literally everyone, and now he's kind of like, well, fuck, what do I need these for?
You can put it in a thing that's smaller than that.
Yeah.
Oh, I went to we did the Ellen show the other week, and they gave us these little cameras. High definition, I mean, it's got three buttons, that's right up my alley. I still can't work the fucking thing. All right, I'm ready when you are.
All right.
We're rolling?
Yeah, I'm going to take a sip of water.
Have you got my new album yet?
No, they didn't give it to me yet. I don't have it yet.
Do you want to hear some of it afterwards?
Yes, I would love to.
Fucking get the machine working, I'll play it for you.
I would absolutely love to.
Can you ask Pop if we're going to turn the CD on afterwards? How do I do it? Or is it just... Pop.
Yeah, Pop knows how to do it.
I never ever thought I'd have my own recording studio.
Oh, really?
Oh, fuck. You don't really need this space anymore. We do most of the work, the guitar work, and the singing in here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use a fucking booth.
You don't have to anymore, huh?
This Pro Tool is fucking ridiculous.
Pro Tools is amazing.
This is the deal. I mean, it costs a lot of money, but if you get a hit record out of it, it's
okay,
worth
I'm gonna
it.
Give a quote.
There's good things and bad things. The good thing is you can come down whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
The bad thing is you got time on your hands, so you go, oh, fuck it, I'll do it tomorrow, I'm going to go for a meal, you know? But yeah. if you got a lock-in with a studio time and your money going out the door, you get it done quicker, you know? But I thought, I've never had the luxury of time, which I don't know whether it's a good thing for me or not, because, I started my new record 18 months ago, then I pulled out, went on tour with Slash, came back, wrote a book, came back, and it's all in and out. So it didn't really take 18 months, I think. Condensed down the time, under 6 months.
Is that about average?
No, it's usually I suppose it right is really with a rehearsal. I like to do it with my band, you know. I'll get a melody line with the band and I'll bring it into the studio. But we constructed the whole thing in the studio this time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It is, but you know, when you're in a studio, you don't have to take, you just do it, you know. Mm-hmm. When you got to do it on stage, that's a problem, because you ain't got enough air in your lungs to get through all the...
Right, 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 right. Yeah, I've recorded some stuff for fun, and it's like, I can't, I'm going to fake this long thing here, as opposed to, I couldn't ever do it live.
All the tricks come out then, you know. But I don't use many tricks. I...
You all set?
I'm all set.
Three, two.
I'm Chris Hardwick. I'm special correspondent for Dig Dialogue here. I'm with... the legendary Ozzy Osbourne.
Hi.
We're in your home studio, which is stunning to me. It's gorgeous.
It's great. The wife always looks at me with her eyes. And
she's looking out over you, watching you, making sure everything's okay.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I never thought I'd have my own studio. I mean, I did the last two albums on my own studio, in this studio. Not, this is the first album in this studio, and the old house was where I did the last one, Black Rain.
So even after you've been doing this this long, you still don't, it's still kind of weird to you to have your own space to record in your house?
Well, you know, I mean, the technology, the way things are going nowadays, mm-hmm. you got this will be obsolete in a couple of years, you know?
Right.
When I first had it built in, the guy goes, well, all you need to do is change this thing called a floppy disk. And it'll be a new one, and it brings it up to date. But that's horse crap, you know?
Well, yeah, and you know what's interesting is that, because I feel like a lot of people, I mean, this is a grander scale than most people, but technology has brought us to a place where people can work from their homes.
You know, my son Jack was flying from America to England, and he comes in and he goes, Dad, when I was on a plane today, I was playing on my laptop and I was getting these rhythms. I'm like, when he played this to me, I was like, it wasn't professionally done for a release. But he got things down on the computer. I'm like, wow, you know?
Yeah, you can do that on iPhones now and iPads and all sorts of like mobile devices.
Well, in the future, I think that's what's going to happen. People are going to start exchanging ideas on that, you know?
Do you think it's weird that basically you don't... Now you don't really have to be a musician to make music. Is that irritating
to
you?
No, I mean... The whole thing has changed. From when I started in 1968, which is like a thousand lifetimes ago, it was like from then till now, we recorded the first Black Sabbath album on 2 4-track machines in 12 hours.
Oh my God.
And it still sells to this day, so that was a fluke, because after that we started to get more. We spent 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 4 months, a year. But it's the technologies. I mean, I never thought in my lifetime I would ever see the demise of records, you know.
It's pretty weird. I mean, it's pretty weird. Do you think it's just the whole the way the music industry has changed? I mean, have you seen it?
There ain't that much of a music industry anymore. I mean, it's all computers now, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the future will bring. It's got to be some holograms or something. You can get your own rock show in your living room, you know.
Do you think? Would you rather have started now, or are you happy that you started when you did?
I would not have, I couldn't handle it now, because the young bands who sign up for record companies now have to give them the t-shirt money, the mm-hmm. publishing, because, you know, they're a company that want to make money, so they don't sell as many records as they used to anymore, because there ain't that many, you know, you can buy CDs, and I suppose right. You can buy a few vinyl, but you know, the days of, like, Thriller over, you know.
Well, this is an excellent segue into basically this. I just want to tell you about how this Digg Dialog works. So Digg has compiled about 40 million users, and so they submitted questions that they wanted to ask mm-hmm. you. We got over 700 submissions, and essentially I'm going to ask you 10 questions that the users... I didn't write these, and none of the producers, but these are actual, your fans, actually, these are their questions.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you what their usernames are, and I'm going to tell you how many digs each question got, which means essentially how many votes, we voted. So let me start with the first question here, because I think this blends beautifully into what we were just saying. So this is submitted by Digg user Pronounce This with 216 digs. What do you think about music piracy, and do you believe in Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails as models of just giving away music?
I don't know, but, you know, you mentioned the younger bands now. If they keep getting it for nothing, not everybody can afford this, you know. I'm an established guy. But for young bands that want to get on, how are they going to do it? Because it still costs money to make.
Mm-hmm.
So if they keep stealing, they ain't going to have nothing to steal in it, because people can't afford to keep having it. It's like if you have a gold watch and somebody keeps stealing it, you're going to run out of money to buy the thing, you know?
Right.
So it's just theft. I mean, we're all somewhat guilty of theft at some time in our life.
Yeah.
But I have my own studio, as I keep saying, and I did it. It didn't actually cost me money for a show out. But people who have to hire studios are not going to be able to afford to do it. They don't do something about it.
But do you think some of that is offset by the fact that it's so cheap to make stuff now?
Well, it's. I mean, it all depends what level you want to be. If you want to do a professional level, you got to get something like this. I mean,
yep.
But you know, my experience is sometimes somebody will, on a cassette machine, and have a hit number one record. It's whatever. It's, you know, it's pros and kind of for some things for it and things against it. I don't know the answer. I mean, it doesn't sound like a good idea if people keep stealing.
Yeah. Well, you've seen it. You've seen a lot of changes in the last 40 years. So, I think the first major revolution you probably saw was music videos. late 70s and then early 80s. So what was that like?
I hated making video because it's like you got a 3 or 4 minute song and you think the guy was making fucking World War IX or something, you know, some epic film. And it's like, when you hear people like Michael Jackson paying like millions making a video.
Yeah, Thriller was $1 million, and at the time in the 80s it was like $1 million for a music video?
I did one video for a song on my Now More Tears on Mama I'm Coming Home, I think it was. And it was a big elaborate production. It was all cosmic and people in the clouds and whatever. I just didn't like it because the song what we wrote was a hometown, you know, my mom coming home. Mm-hmm. So the first one cost $350,000, which I thought was a complete con. And I said, give me $50,000, I'll get you another one. So I got the film crew who did Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit. That kind of a vibe, mm-hmm. just a camera and me running around. And the MTV picked up both of them up, you know. But how can you justify spending $1 million on a video? You're just blowing your own trumpet, you know, ego.
Well, yeah, because I know a lot of artists spend that money, and it's like, well, you know you have to pay that back, right? Like,
oh, absolutely.
The label's not going to cover that.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Because, you know, they spent $1 million. It didn't make the song any better. Because the song's the song. If you want to, people don't buy the record because you spent $1 million on a video. They buy it either because they like it. If they don't like it, they don't buy it, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that, how do you see the sort of distribution channels now between radio and the internet?
You know what, it changes so quickly. I don't keep my ear to the ground. I've got staff that do that for me, unfortunately. You know. But now it's just a whole different ball game now. I'm doing more work now promoting and TV slots. And on Friday, I broke a world record at the Dodgers Stadium. For the my new album's called Scream, mm-hmm. and they had to scream the people in the arena, the stadium, for 1 minute, and we're in the Guinness Book of Records there.
That is pretty sweet.
Yeah, but it's kind of what you have to do now, you know.
Oh, I was having this conversation with the producers earlier that, you know, like, yeah, it's there's so much media available, there's so many people, and there's so many channels. That it's almost like you have to be as theatrical as possible to stand out anymore.
Well, it's like, you know, the only person I've seen come out of the woodwork lately in these last years that's had an impression on me is that Lady Gaga. At least she put some panache back into the game, business. Yeah. So there was a period of time when I go, is he from the audience? Is he from the band? Is he from the crew? Which is worse?
Yeah.
I mean, you can people laugh about the 80s and having the flossed hair. But at least you knew it was in a band.
You know,
the singer had blonde flashes, the band had black dyed hair.
Yeah, grunge killed that for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's
all the same thing. Modern music is the way you... If your parents don't like it, it's got to be a winner.
Right.
We're the people that made your parents like it.
Well, it's got to rebel against... Yeah, exactly, sure. Exactly right. It's got to rebel. It's funny to watch kids rebel against grunge. You're like, grunge is dumb. Now we want electronic dance music. You're like, it's not really that rebellious.
It's mind you, back in the day when we started smoking pot and all that, you had to get all that stuff, you had to go through a friend who knew a friend who knew a friend who knew a friend. Now, you walk down the road and buy it from a coffee shop down there. You know?
Yeah, and they might legalize it in California.
I don't think they will.
You don't think it's going to happen?
I don't think so, because they're already like getting down it, because there's lines of cars, there's these medical marijuana shops, and people are getting
they're shutting down. All right, so the next question was submitted by dig user Willie6, and it's got 205 digs. As a pioneer of heavy metal music, what do you think of current heavy metal music?
Well, I think the heavy metal brand is what kind of remains the music that other people don't understand. I mean, 70s, 80s, 90s, the new millennium is nothing like what each other. 70s metal, 80s metal, completely different. I mean, it was like pop rock in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But now, I don't really listen to new stuff, because there ain't no new stuff for me. I've been doing it 42 years. So and I've got to watch it when I'm making my record, because if something gets in my head, inadvertently, it comes out in my music, you know. But it's kind of like music that people don't understand. Like, oh, it's metal. Anybody with a singer, bass player, drummer, and a guitar player, it's metal. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know. I've never got my head around that word, heavy metal. what's it mean? So 70s, 80s, 90s now, and now. It's nothing like each other, so, but why is it called heavy metal? If it was like a grunge metal or acid metal or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like the word metal, I think it is attached to music that I don't understand.
Well, by the way, I'm wearing a heavy metal shirt, but it's really nerdy. These are actually heavy metals on the periodic table of the elements. This is cobalt. That's molybdenum. No, I shouldn't. What do you listen to when you're just sitting around? Like,
I listen to old music. I mean, it takes me about 15, 20 years to get into the music, what's around now, you know? I mean, you know, I listened to the Beatles. That was the first thing that I really got my head into. The Beatles changed my life, you know.
Did you ever hang out with them?
I've met a couple of them, yeah. Paul McCartney and Ringo. I never met John or George. I'd love to have. I've never saw them play. And that was like when Lennon got murdered, I can remember what time of day I found out, where I was, what the situation was. It's like when Kennedy got assassinated. I remember I was coming home from Boy Scouts. 6 in the evening, and I got home, and my house was all in my morning. It's one of them things when John Lennon got shot, I thought to myself, why, what the fuck did this guy ever do to anybody but make their life worth living?
I
still can't get my head around that. Because when he came out of retirement, semi-retirement, and he put that Double Fantasy album out, I was like, great, they've got another chance of me seeing them. But I've seen McCartney, but he's fucking awesome, McCartney, live. When you're watching his show, you go, how many fucking songs did this guy write? How many hits? Everyone's a winner, you know?
If you just wrote one Beatles song...
The Beatles, it's signed. I mean, in 10 years, I went from being a pop band to like a future band, you know, like a Pink Floyd kind of thing.
Yeah.
But better, you know?
I mean, is that just not, do you think, because sometimes...
I don't think there will ever be another Beatles.
That's what I was saying.
Never, ever. To have the, because everything after them was new.
Mm-hmm.
It was trying to be new, but it was off the Beatles. And I mean, I can hear the Beatles and a lot of different things as time goes on. Their whole approach to music was great, you know. And the lyrics never necessarily meant any story. But it kind of did in a weird way, you know. Lennon's lyrics and McCartney's... The Lennon and McCartney thing was brilliant.
But Lennon was, I think he was kind of a bully, though. Like,
I don't know. I mean, as I'm going through my life, I'm listening and finding new things out of it because I realise how many hit pop songs McCartney had his head into. Lennon was a cynic. It's like that thing what McCartney says when he does interviews. He goes, "It's getting better all the time. It couldn't get much worse."
Yeah. And he's like, we gotta leave that in.
That's perfect.
And I love Lennon too, but when I say he was a bully, I heard something where someone asked him, "Do you think Ringo Starr is the best drummer in the world?" And he said,
"I don't think he's the best
drummer in the Beatles."
Yeah. when they came to America, and I go, "What do you call your haircut?" He goes, "Bill." Yeah, I mean, Sir Witt was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was amazing. I've never seen.
You gotta go and see McCartney. You gotta go. It's just fucking incredible when you see. He does things from the past to now, and it's great. I mean, they were the reason why I became me. You know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you see their influence in your work?
I tell you what they got me. They always had great melody lines. Now, if I could sing about fucking, have you seen the little piggies? It was all great. You know, who gives a fuck about piggies? But the melodies were great. You know.
Yeah.
And if you have, my father was an old time guy. He said, "If you haven't got a melody, you ain't got a song."
Well,
I don't know how these hip hop people are going to get out.
Well, they'll just sample the melodies that the people like the Beatles are. But I think a lot of that was all that time they spent in
Hamburg.
In Hamburg.
We did the same in Star Club, Hamburg, Black Sabbath.
Oh, you did the same thing? Were we literally just playing for like 8 hours a day?
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, you get up and you do alternates. You go, you're on first, then there's another band, and you do that all day until the following morning.
Oh my God!
I mean, believe it or not, was the best fucking training a band could have because you invent shit to get. When you play, one 45-minute spot was a guitar solo, 1:45, and you just learn your craft. You know?
So are you writing stuff on? Are you kind of improvising stuff on?
It was an education for us because when you go and do it, you know, as Ringo says, when you got nothing, you got to buy it. When you get everything, you get everything for free, you know.
Yeah.
It's We had nothing to lose. The thing is, we had everything to gain and nothing to lose. We had nothing anyway, you know. So it was. When we first came to the US, it was like the biggest thing that ever happened to us in our lives.
Is it weird when you become that successful? Because then you can kind of do whatever you want. Is it scary to have that kind of freedom?
Yeah, well, you know, you go through the ego bit. You know, you buy the car, you get posing around with your cigars and your whatever, and your sort of jewelry shit on. You know,
and then, I haven't hit that yet. But I'm on my way.
But it's like the trappings of success, the drugs and the groupies and the whole deal. You sample it all, you know, but then you get real again, you know.
Does it really? Because I think for a lot of people who've never experienced that, when they hear someone say, "Ah, the groupies," all that just gets boring.
I mean, there's only so many orifices you can mess around with, you know. then you go, "Oh, just get the fuck out of here."
Right. A third question was submitted by dig user Shawnee B. This got 182 digs. And
what does that mean, gigs?
A dig means basically it's an online way of saying that someone liked something.
So how many people make one gig?
A dig. Well, this question, 182 people dug this question, and so that was one of the top 10.
Okay.
So that's what that means, basically. So he wrote this. So I didn't write this. This is a silly thing to say to you, but you've done some crazy shit. Period. Just in case you forgot. What's your biggest regret, and what crazy shit are you happy you've done?
Well, we all have regrets. I can't change any of the things I've done, but you move on. I don't go, "My God, I did that in 1973. You've got to move on. It's like I heard somebody once say, when you come to the crossroads, whatever road you take, you've got to live with the good and the bad and whatever comes out of it, mm-hmm. you know. So my road's been full of surprises, shall we say. I mean, when I die, I suppose that people remember me biting the head of a bat or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing to say how many people I've entertained and how everything's gone in my whole life, you know.
Well, I think people do have an understanding of that. I think they probably just take those isolated incidents as sort of shortcuts.
Did Robin Hood really rob the rich to feed the poor? Did all these, like, was Al Capone? Why do we always want to remember the bad people, the bad things that people did? You know, like Hitler, like Stalin.
Yeah.
My ex-wife.
She was part of the Axis of Evil?
Kinda.
Well, that's good. Well, I think it's... I mean, I remember I was in school when that happened, All the kids had the Aussie, like they wrote it.
It's like, I mean, rock and roll is a business. If your parents hate it, you're gonna get, you know, with a band that made what parents love to hate, you know.
Yeah.
And when it was like, remember when they just stick a record, if it was bad language or anything on the record that was they needed a sticker, people only bought the stickered album, you know. Right. They didn't want to buy the one without the sticker. I was like, please sticker my catalog.
So what do you think is just the second part of this guy's question, what's something really crazy that you did that you're really happy you did?
Live.
That's good. That's a good one. That is a good one. What do you attribute that to?
Luck. I mean, I should be dead long, long ago. I mean, my wife's been very, she gave me that they call tough love. Mm-hmm. Like one time I was coming, I was in a hotel with her and I felt really ill from doing too much or whatever. And I said, "Sharon, I think I'm dying." She goes, "Well, die quietly. I've got to get up at 9 o'clock. I'm like,
So you think if someone's kind of going through that, then it's really important for them to have someone to kind of look out for them?
No, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I was just lucky to have somebody that did. But I mean, me alone in my head didn't do a very good job, you know. I mean, I've been in that rehab. But you know what makes me smile somewhat? When I hear people go to, like, rehabs and they go, "Oh, it didn't work." You know, the answer is, it wasn't the rehab that didn't work. You didn't take the suggestions I gave you for real, you know?
I've been sober for a long time, and I like, almost 7 years. I mean, not to make this about me, but I'm just relating to what you're saying. And a lot of people think that when they quit, like, "Oh, that should solve all your problems." But it's not. Because you...
You drank in the first place to medicate the
problems
you had.
Absolutely.
I mean, it'll spread from that to sex, from sex to food, from food to gambling, shopping, whatever it is, obsessive compulsion. I mean, I'm drunk for around 7 years. I don't know. I don't count. I just don't drink today, you know?
Yeah.
I don't... It's like we're raw, you know. We're raw people that trying to get through the day, you know.
I think a lot of it has to do with just trying to distract yourself from your own thoughts, you know.
My head is like a landmine, you know. You go.
But you look great now, and you feel good in general. Well, that's good. And I make sure you're all right. I care about you. I don't know you that well, but I care about you. The next question was submitted by Dig User. This looks like Bo Neal 428 with 135 digs. Oh, I already asked you this. What are some of the bands you're listening to? Actually, you talked about the Beatles. What are some of the other bands you're listening to, Carl?
Led Zeppelin, David Bowie, Pink Floyd, all bands from when I was a younger guy.
Plant's voice is really hanging in there. I never would have thought that register could hold all these years.
He's got an amazing voice, and his style of singing back in the Zeppelin days was phenomenal. I mean, he's from a similar area where I'm, like Birmingham. He's surrounded by an area called the Midlands. He comes from Wolverhampton, which is right next door to Birmingham. And there's a lot of interesting things come out of my hometown, Birmingham.
Were there music clubs in there?
Oh yeah, there was like music clubs. There was places to play, pubs and things. But a lot of successful bands come out of Birmingham. Moody Blues, mm-hmm. ELO, Black Sabbath, a lot of them.
Do you think there was something just about the area? Some cities just have a good scene.
I mean, it was just what we did. I mean, back then it was all the Liverpool sound. Birmingham just came out with just as many, if not more, than Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. Well, like in the States, you know, we have like Austin or Seattle or Portland.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's these kind of pockets around the country that just happen to have good.
It's like when more than two bands come from the one town, it's like the thing to be, Seattle, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Fifth question is submitted by Dig User Chased Wards. This had 125 digs. And he says, what is the real story behind Iron Man?
Well, it was Geezer Butler, the bass player of Sabbath, wrote me the lyric. And what it was about was a guy who travels through time. And he goes to the future and he sees the demise of mankind. On the way back to the present time, he goes through this macabre thing and he gets turned to iron. And he gets so frustrated trying to warn the mankind about his impending doom that he ends up losing it, and he starts killing everybody himself. You know.
Do you like comic books? Because that's a real that's a comic book story.
It's kind of Geezer. I didn't write the lyrics. Geezer Butler wrote the lyrics.
Oh, okay, okay. Do you like? It's also very Doctor Who-y. Do you watch Doctor Who?
Oh no? Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Oh, I like the old ones rather than the new one.
Oh yeah.
The hulkiness.
Yeah, yeah, the Tom Baker episode with the scarf and
with the egg boxes and things.
Basically, they're literally, if this room were black, it could be a Doctor Who planet from the 70s, and I could come in a rubber mask.
That old TARDIS must stink now. You never seen with a broom. traveling through time forever.
Through the farthest reaches of the universe, they never once have I ever seen the TARDIS get hosed
out. Why did I go to the crap around there? Doctor, I'll be back in 5 minutes. I've got a terrible gut.
We're not sure the Time Lords actually go to the bathroom. I'm sure some delightful user out there would let us know, though. The sixth question is from Dig User Sean Juan AO. It's got 124 digs. And he writes, if you are the Prince of Darkness, then who is the king?
King of Darkness?
Who's the King of Darkness?
I wouldn't know. I'm hoping for the job eventually.
So you think if whoever the current king is dies, then you're next
in
line?
I'm next in line, yeah. Yeah, probably a cosmic father of mine.
Literally something like that. All right. The next question is Dig User Palencia. This had 118 digs. And he or she wants to know, is it true that you and Bill Ward took LSD every day for 6 months?
Yep.
Okay. And how was that period of your life? Do you remember it?
Very hazy and very scary. We used to do it a lot, me and Bill.
Yeah?
Oh, I don't know, every day for 6 months, it's impossible. You'd be in a mental hospital. We did quite a bit of it, though.
I mean, what was the attitude toward that back in those days? Like, now, obviously, everyone's drugs are bad, but then, was it just part of the social
tapestry? I mean, don't forget, Black Sabbath came at the tail end of Flower Power, you know?
Right.
So we all thought, fuck, Flower Power, you know? So we were like investigating, doing experimenting. I mean, it was great until I started having bad trips. Then when I started, when she started having that, it's over. Mm-hmm. Every time I took it after that, it was bad. I was screaming through the rafters, you know.
What does it feel? I mean, I've never done it, so I don't know.
Let me tell you something. Don't.
I won't.
It's just weird shit. It's not. It's a thing you take and you have a bit of fun with it. But then when you go, you know what, I've had enough now, I want to go to sleep. That's when it goes, now we play.
Oh, that sucks.
And you lie in your bed and you're fucking in the scene and imagining all this shit.
Don't do LSD, kids, because that'll happen. All right, next question is submitted by dig user S. Gurwell, 1985. I don't know either. Ozzy, what do you, when you look at the current state of music, what disappoints you the most?
I don't really think it disappoints me. I just get on with mine, you know. It's so big now. I mean now when you see that music industry is basically a TV show now, mm-hmm. with a panel, yeah. like American Idol and all that. My wife's on one of them as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's in England. How you can tell in England for a long, long time, people would say what they think the next Christmas number one record is going to be. But now it's whoever wins this X Factor show in England and get the number one. It's like it's changed music, you know. Yeah. I mean, Simon Cowell loves it. I mean, good luck to him. But it's not the same anymore. I mean, well, I'm saying about these talent shows. I don't know how these kids get up there and do it and then get the. Rear end reamed out by a panel. I don't. It's that my hat goes off to them because I mean, I being a 42-year veteran, I would not like to do that.
Well, I don't know how these kids. I mean, like you know, you can win American Idol or come in second or whatever, and then all of a sudden you get famous. But you know, if you're still not really used to touring or playing with crowds or
it's. I mean, if they can get on television and do what they do, and I mean. Whoever gets up there, whether they get laughed off or what, they've got balls, man. I mean, so I don't suppose they would have too much stage fright when they're going if they went on arenas. I don't know. I mean, from being nothing to being the winner of X Factor or America Got Talent or whatever, and trying to get on your life, it doesn't happen like that because you're fired out of a cannon and you've got to land sooner or later, you know.
Yeah.
And reality, it hurts because when you. You know, I've been fortunate. I've had a very fruitful career. But so I've through my career, I remember going, "Oh, fucking hell, Bon Jovi, how am I going to survive this?" And you do, you know, Peter Frampton and all these major new bands and things are going. But I just plod on, you know. So it's never really affecting me. But the downside of these talent shows has got to be going back to a regular, you know, job after being on the top of the world.
Well, you're about to go on tour again in a couple of weeks for like. You were on for like 18 months or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Does that even register to you anymore? I mean, how do you?
Well, the way it's not straight 18 months. It's 18 months. It's like touring over a period of 18 months. Where I take gaps and breaks and holidays and things along the way. I couldn't do 18 months straight.
Yeah. Do you miss home? Or are you just used to?
This is home.
No, but I mean, like when you're on the road, do you miss being home, or are you just kind of used to being on the boat?
I mean, when I do come home after tour, Sharon, my wife goes, "Let's go." I go, "No, Sharon, my job's going out. I want to stay in for the next 3 months." You know.
Yeah.
But if I had my way, I'd never leave the house.
But you must still get something. I mean, do you still feel a rush when you perform? Like when you get on
like
the stage,
it's nothing like a good gig, and there's nothing like a bad gig. When you do a good gig, it's the best feeling in the world. When you do a bad gig, it's the worst feeling in the world. Because every time I go up there, I want to give him my heart and soul, you know? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, sometimes my voice is so bad. I'm like, what the fuck is anybody listening to this for? Can my voice go? I mean, you go to a sporting event and you cheer on your team for an hour and say what you're going to feel like the following morning when you wake up. But I have that every day.
Well, so do you...
I'm not complaining.
No, not at all. Because I do stand up, and sometimes I wonder, like, do you feel like you can have a good show that maybe the crowd didn't connect with as much, or a bad show that they love, but you feel inside like I didn't.
Sometimes you're right, because sometimes I go and I go, "That was fucking terrible tonight," and the people will come to me and say, "Go, I see you're getting better with age." You know, I go, "What the fuck are you smoking?" I mean, it's sometimes you're right. Sometimes what my perception of what's going on is off.
Yeah. Or you just have a different, you know what kind of level
you want
to hit.
If I get off, and I should have said to you, if I get off while I'm performing and the crowd don't get to where I want it, I take that as a bad show.
Mm-hmm.
But you know.
I think maybe it's just a question of going easier on yourself.
I'm very hard on myself.
Yeah. But I think most of the people who excel to your level in their field probably are, and that's why they're where they are.
There are people in the business that go on stage, you know, and the impression I get is the audience are privileged to see them, not me. I'm privileged to see the audience, you know.
Yeah.
I really am. I mean, without them, we ain't got a fucking pot of piss in.
The ninth question here was submitted by dig user B. Liday. This had 64 digs, and he wants to know, or she, who'd you pick to play in a movie about your life?
Denzel Washington.
That's a perfect answer. I don't even think we have to go into in depth on that. I would. That's perfect. Tenth question.
Or Prince? Yeah.
Prince is tiny, though. I don't know if they could get him. They'd have to trap him. Uh-huh. They'd have to set up these Prince traps around his house and be like, I got you, Prince. Now go play Ozzy. Be like, let me go. The tenth question here was submitted by Guzmar, 57 digs. This is maybe a tough one to answer. What was going through your head when you first heard of Ronnie James Dio's passing?
Well, I mean, I never hung out. I met him a bunch of times, but we just didn't hang out much. But he was, I admired his talent, his singing voice. I mean, so many singers owe their career to Ronnie James Dio because so many singers wanted to sound like him, you know. And when I heard he got cancer, I immediately sent a message to his office saying, is there anything we can do? Because, you know, Sharon battled cancer, she beat it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I remember when Sharon got diagnosed, I thought, what the fuck do you do? I never knew anybody that survived, you know. I thought it was all bullshit when they said, you know, people can beat it. So I just sent a humane thing, and I said, you know, if we can help you, do you want to ask this question, please call us. Then I was at an award show a few weeks back, and he was there. I never actually spoke to him. We had paths, but I was doing an award out and he was doing something else. But I met the drummer, Vinny Appice.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, did Ronnie get my message? And he says, I don't know. And I said, well, tell him, you know, I'm thinking, my thoughts are with him. And if he wants to talk to Sharon, just call us. Then we found out he passed away. It was very sad.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a great singer. He'd be sadly missed.
Yeah.
We need somebody like Ronnie James Dio.
Well, after this, I just want to make sure we're not taking too much of your time here. How are we doing? We're doing pretty well for time, actually. Right, how are you doing for tape?
40 minutes
in. Oh, okay. We are? Okay. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I just have a couple of quick questions that I want to know, which is, what's your process? Like, what's your songwriting process? Can you sit down and write, or do you just have to get struck by lightning?
Sometimes I get struck by lightning, sometimes I get like, most of my best songs have come out of nowhere. Like, for instance, the song Paranoid was a filler track for the album, which is going to be called War Pigs, hence the guys on the album sleeve with the pink leotards and Roger Brown, the producer, saying, just bang anything out for 3 minutes. Now the blue came, Paranoid, it's one of the greatest songs I've ever had a part to write with, you know.
Yeah.
And then other times, I mean, You as much as you sit down and you structure music, out of nowhere, like a meteorite will hit you, and it's like, wow, what are you know? And they're gifts, I call them.
Yeah.
I mean, on the title track for the No More Tears album, No More Tears, came right at the very end when we were in pre-production. We've been working on the album for 6 long months. I mean, sometimes you walk in and write one straight away, and then other times you think you've got writer's block, you know. Mm-hmm. But now, since I don't drink, I used to think that alcohol and drugs were the fuel for my creativity.
Oh, I had that. I was afraid of that too.
And so I thought, how the fuck can I go to a club gig? You know, I said to a friend of mine who I speak to about my problem all the time, my sponsor. I said, how can I go to a fucking bar now with a Perrier once? And he goes, you don't have to go to a bar for anything. You can drink Perrier water in the fucking street, you know. But that's the way my head was thinking.
Yeah.
When I used to be out there, I used to think everybody drank. And it's not true, you know. Everybody around me at that time, for those years, drank, because that's all the only people I want to be around, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a gift that we have. I'm not a educated man by any means. I'm dyslexic. I'm attention deficit disorder. But I know when there's a good melody flying around, you know. Yeah. But having this is good and it's bad. The good thing is you can come down whenever you want and until you procrastinate.
Oh, because it's right there. You're like, I'll get to it. I'll get to it tomorrow.
I've got to go to the movie with Sharon. But I can't stand being in this box forever and a day. I have to get out in the out and about, you know. But I'm lucky enough to get my producer, Kevin Shirko, who just lived in this room and got a lot of the sounds. Go, I want that to be more heavier. Okay, I'll come back in an hour, and then he'd be labouring over the machine.
So if you were to attribute one thing to the longevity that you've had. What would it be?
I don't know what this. I mean, I don't know. I suppose it's luck. I mean, because I used to go drinking with John Bonham from Led Zeppelin. He died, and I never. And we didn't go. Oh, well, he had one pint more than me.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't work that way, you know. I mean, people die every. I mean, it's only because we're in the public eye that you hear about us dying, you know. But people must die every day of them choking on their vomit or taking one too many drinks or pills or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the rehabs are not filled with celebrities.
Right.
You know, everyday walk of life. And it's the same problem which we all have. The only difference is between us and them. I suppose when they would try to pull up to work sloggled, they you can go home. But if we turn up loaded, they go, send me a good night.
In.
I don't know another job. I'm wondering if that was a part of why I wanted to do the job that I was proud of anyway.
Well, maybe it was tied. The same thing with comedy. Like comedy, you do stand-up comedy in a bar.
Do you know some of the most depressing people I've ever met is comics?
Do you like comedy?
I love comedy. My whole thing is comedy. I don't take myself seriously it was my survival mechanism. If you can make somebody laugh, they ain't going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, that's what I had to do in school because I got stuffed in trash cans for being a nerdy kid. So yeah. I had to try to be jokey.
I was the crazy class clown. Anything to get the kids on my side and steal, beg, borrow, pull face at the teacher when he turned me back, throw shit at the teacher. You know?
Do you see a lot of crossover between rock stars and comedians? Because I feel like every comedian wants to be a rock star and every rock star wants to be a comedian.
It's not comedians and rock stars in Los Angeles, it's medical stuff.
Oh, okay.
You've got a platinum disc for changing your face or something, you know.
And everyone's turning into these kind of weird robot-y looking people at the plastic.
I remember a few years back, Sharon and I were waiting for our car to come up from the Valley Park car park. And as it came up from behind us, all these women turn around at the same time. It's like, fucking hell, they all have the same face.
These weird Twilight Zone plastic cat faces.
Do, 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 do. Expecting the mutant. Do not adjust your TV set. I mean, fucking hell, Joan Rivers as well. Have you seen her now?
I've seen her.
She has no expression. That was very funny.
No, she just kind of has these slits in her eyes and then her face.
I'm not even sure she eats through her mouth anymore.
But I don't think she can eat with her mouth anymore. I think they have to like shove hams in her arms or something. I don't know how she does it. My mom goes, Joan Rivers looks amazing, and I'm like,
For a 70-something-year-old woman, she looks pretty good. Mind you, though, I bet I wouldn't like to. You know what I'm thinking.
I know what you're thinking. Don't think that I haven't been like, could I? No, I could never do that. That would be
enough. I would have to drink now.
No.
Snort now.
I think I would rather go back to drinking than fuck Joan Rivers. I'm just saying. And if Joan Rivers, you're watching this, I apologize, but I would rather drink again than to...
I'd like to go drinking then. I'd probably fuck him.
And then you'd be like,
Give me the knife!
I better call my sponsor. This did not go well. All right, thank you so much for joining us today. You are delightful. Such a pleasure and an honor to interview you. If you want to get Ozzy's new album, it's called Scream. It's coming out June 22nd. He's actually going to play it for He's going to play it for me in a second, and I'm sort of shitting my pants about that, so I got to go. But if you want to rewatch this or any of the other 19 shows that Dig Dialogue has done so far, you're going to want to go to digdialogue.com. The entire archive is there. Also, I'm going to put an extended audio version of the interview on my website, Nerdist.com, for the Nerdist podcast, which is my audio show. There's extra stuff there that you won't see here, but you'll hear it with your ears. So thanks again for watching. And we'll see you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history.
Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now, in hardcover or digital editions, wherever you get your books.